Thank you so much, Greg. I'm very happy to be backstage with our soloist, Jonathan Biss. Jonathan, what a beautiful performance.
Thank you so much.
You got so much color out of that instrument. Tell me what this Schumann concerto means to you, because it appeals to people on so many different levels.
I think with Schumann's music in general, the thing that draws me first is the poetry. And by poetry, I mean the detail, the way in which a phrase is turned, maybe not exactly how you expected, and therefore in a way that really just takes your breath away. I mean, I often say about Schumann that it's not what he says, but how he says it that makes it so moving. I feel like in this piece, he does somehow find that spot in the Venn diagram where it's still incredibly poetic and incredibly personal, but also it's grand as well. And, you know, when the euphoria of the last movement arrives, there's nothing like it, really. I mean, as a player, it's really an overwhelming experience.
We were talking about his intimate poetic side. You know, the early piano pieces like Kreisleriana and Fantasy in C Major, thinking about Kinderszenen. And yet, do you feel that he reaches a totally new realm with this concerto?
I think that this idea of writing with a large audience in mind and writing on a grand scale is different from those pieces. The fantasy among the early pieces maybe has some of those qualities as well. But yeah, I do think it represents a new direction. But as with all of his piano music, it really is inspired by Clara. You know, that's the root of it. And you hear, I mean, her name is even embedded in the theme of the first movement. And I think his feeling for her and his admiration for her as a musician is kind of, it was the catalyst for those early pieces. Again, I think she's imprinted all over this piece too.
And she premiered it, I believe. She must have been an amazing pianist because it's a really hard concerto to play.
Yeah, I feel sure that she was an incredible pianist, and both brilliant and also sort of incredibly musically alert. I mean, her own music is evidence, again, of an extremely sensitive musical mind. And, you know, to have been a woman and to have achieved the career that she did in those days, I mean, she must have been a total force to be reckoned with.
You know, you think about what those composers achieved and what those musicians achieved back in the 19th century. We didn't have technology back then, electric lights. Have we advanced much in terms of music?
In terms of music, oh, it's very difficult to say. I mean, I don't think you can really assess the quality of any work of art while it's new. And it may be that there are pieces being written now that will mean to us in 50, 100 years, what, you know, the great works of Schumann and Beethoven do now. It's hard to say. Certainly, you know, this music, as old as it is staggeringly great. These pieces, you know, give voice to parts of ourselves that, you know, otherwise they don't really find a voice. And, you know, I don't know. Have we advanced? It's possible. I don't really think you can advance upon some of the great music of the past.
Especially the first movement, that opening theme, that spiritual theme. There is something almost otherworldly about it.
Yeah, and again, I think so personal. I think that's, for me, what Schumann managed to do to a degree that almost no one else ever did. There is this sense of him speaking either really internally to himself or maybe to that one other person who might understand his meaning exactly. And that intimate quality in the writing, it's sometimes almost too much. I mean, you sometimes have the feeling when you listen to Schumann that you're eavesdropping on something so private. And that's why it's so wonderful. And it's also why it feels, you know, kind of almost borderline uncomfortable at times.
Beethoven's 250th birth anniversary is coming up, and you've taken on a wide array of projects. In association with that, speaking of new work, a commissioning program with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The St. Paul Chamber Orchestra is co-commissioning for me 5 different composers to write pieces, each of which are, in one way or another, responses to the 5 Beethoven piano concerti. So when they're being premiered in a pairing with, you know, the Beethoven that they correspond to. And it's been really, really exciting. By now, 4 of the 5 have already been written. And I think the thing that gives me the most pleasure about it is how different the pieces are from one another and how differently the four composers took on the assignment. And I think the fact that the pieces that we've ended up with are so diverse is a testament to the power of Beethoven. I think no matter what kind of a musician you are, no matter what kind of style you write in, you will have something to say about him.
Is there a difference in the way you prepare to perform a piece like that, a brand new piece, versus Beethoven or Schumann?
Well, I think it's been incredibly helpful to me as an interpreter of old music to work on new music. First of all, just to have the problem of there being no performance tradition and having to really figure it out on my own, I think that is what we should do with old music as well. You know, we should really try to come to our own understanding rather than perpetuate someone else's mistakes. But it's very difficult. I mean, I can't help the fact that I've heard the Schumann Piano Concerto played live and on record by probably dozens of pianists at this point. But I think, again, having gone through this experience of, you know, the music is sent to me, it has never been played before, and having to just figure it out, that's been very useful. And I would also say that the experience of working with composers has been very useful, sort of seeing where they are adamant about, you know, the details that are in the score being just so, and where actually they're more interested in freedom and in gestural quality. You know, I think that, you know, gives me more confidence in making choices when I play old music, because, you know, you have to guess at a certain point. Schumann's not around to answer my questions.
Maybe that's a good thing. You just talked briefly for a moment what it's like to play in Philadelphia with the Philadelphia Orchestra, because you live here in Philadelphia.
Yes, I live here and I studied here, and so I know, either from having gone to school with them or having, you know, run into them in Whole Foods, most of the orchestra, I would say. And so it's a different kind of experience from playing with other orchestras. There's incredible familiarity, and I love that. It is just truly such a great orchestra. I mean, but really one of the world's great orchestras. The maybe more challenging aspect of it is that, you know, I'm home and life doesn't stop for these concerts. And so, you know, this week while I'm, you know, preparing for the rehearsals and the concerts, I'm also teaching, and, you know, there was a leak in my house, and, you know, all of those things that, you know, it's like a vacation when you go away, and you don't have to think about it. I only have to play. So this week it's a little bit of a juggling act, but to play with the Philadelphia Orchestra, it's one I'll happily go through anytime.
Happily go through anything to play with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Finally, I want to ask you about your lifelong obsession with Beethoven. You're in the process of recording all 32 of Beethoven's piano sonatas. How many are you up to?
I'm just about done. I'm going to make the 9th and final disc in a couple of months. And that only has, some of them have 4, some of them have 3 sonatas. That only has 3. So I guess I have recorded 30 of them. No, 29. Sorry. I'm not to be trusted with math after a concert.
So did you have a favorite, or one that was the most challenging?
A favorite is hard. I mean, there are certain pieces that have meant something special to me in certain points in my life. The Appassionata was one of the first pieces I fell in love with when I was maybe not more than 10. 109 was the first of the late sonatas that I played, and it has meant so much to me. And then since I've played the Hammerklavier, I don't think there's anything greater than its slow movement. I've never encountered music that I think is deeper than that. And that segues into the other part of your question. It's also, that's probably the most challenging thing I've ever played. From every point of view, I think it taxes you physically, mentally, psychologically to an absurd degree. But that's why it's so amazing to play it.
But going along with your recordings, since 2013, you've been offering, through Coursera and the Curtis Institute, where you're on the faculty, a massive open online course, a MOOC, exploring Beethoven's piano sonatas. Why was it important for you to create and produce a MOOC on Beethoven's sonatas?
Well, these pieces have meant so much to me, and they've been such a huge part of my life. I just think that the question of how a performer relates to the music that they play is interesting, you know? And so I'm not a musicologist. I cannot offer that perspective, but I can offer the perspective of someone who has learned and played all of them. I think that's something that people crave. You know, I think people who love music, who go to concerts, who listen to recordings, they want to know how choices are made, what matters most to the performer, like what they feel about the music. It's been a great experience sharing them in that way. Of course, I mean, nothing compares to playing the pieces, but this is another level of kind of, yeah, engagement with the music and with the listener that has really been very, very gratifying.
What's been the most surprising thing about doing your MOOC?
Again, just the level of enthusiasm for it on the part of the people taking the course. The number of people who have told me that it really has had an effect on how they listen to music. I had no idea what to expect going in, so I thought maybe no one will watch it, but I'll still have learned a lot from doing it. But it really clearly means something to people, and that's something I take a lot of satisfaction from.
That's great. If people want to check it out, how can they do so?
So the class is called Exploring Beethoven's Piano Sonatas, and it's on Coursera.org. And if you can't remember that URL, you can find it on my website as well.
Well, thank you, Jonathan Biss. Brilliant performance, and thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much.